And welcome back to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, the Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth, we know it as PCCY, Donna Cooper. Donna, thank you for coming in.
Great to be here.
With all of the talk right now about soda taxes, with lead, with education, childcare, all these discussions, let's get into it right away with a quick PCCY 101. And who the heck are you?
Well, 101, we're parents, we're teachers, we're grandparents. We're aunts and uncles, people who are looking out for kids. And we bring people together and we say, how can we do better by kids? And what that means is individually, how can we do better? But also, how can the government do better so that our kids get the resources they need to thrive? We have support and not members, but advocates, basically, from across the five counties, Bucksmunt County, Montgomery County, Delaware County, Chester County, and Philadelphia County. And we speak to local leaders and we say, here's what our kids need and how can we work together to make that possible? And we do it by publishing research. In fact, in the next month, you'll see a number of really groundbreaking studies coming out about the study, the status of kids in our region, and we'll do some teasers on that today. And we also take people to meet with elected officials, and then we do direct service for kids. So we make sure kids can get free dental care if their insurance coverage doesn't cover it, free eye care, glasses if their insurance doesn't cover it, and we raise money and put our teachers in our schools across the region. So we make sure we're there for kids. We translate that direct service into policy changes that we need the government to make so every kid thrives.
You're kind of like a watchdog. You're looking at the state of what's happening.
Well, funny you say that. When we were founded 37 years ago, people called us the children's watchdog.
Then now let's go back and say, what is the status of a kid right now? A child who's growing up in the five county area, and does it make much of a difference if it's a kid growing up in Montgomery County, Bucks County, or Philadelphia County?
Well, look, on many levels, kids' lives are better today than they were when PCCY was founded because our communities are more developed. We, across the region, have recreation centers and libraries, and we have, highly skilled teachers across the region attempting to teach our children. But on many levels, they're not as good as they were in the 60s when PCCY was founded because we respect public education less. We invest less in the maintenance and support of child-serving institutions. And so if you're a child that needs some help, whether it's in learning or in other parts of life, it's very hard to get it. And that's the same for a kid in Delaware County, in Upper Darby, in the William Penn School District, and in Bristol Borough, and in the rural parts of northern Montgomery County. And it's the same for kids in Montgomery County and Downingtown and Phoenixville. There are kids who are falling through the cracks. And I'll tell you, one of the things, Laura, that contributes to that so much is that wages haven't grown very much in the last 35 years, right? So the cost of living's increased, but wages haven't. And as a result, families are just having a really hard time staying afloat if they have young children.
Let's start with education. Let's discuss education, and we'll work that one, and then we'll move into health care and general well-being of kids in this area. And before the show began, we just chatted for a couple of minutes, and I expressed kind of a surprise when you said that a kid growing up in Philadelphia really is basically the same as a kid growing up in a Bucks County, which we always consider to be much more affluent. And you surprised me there when you talked about taxes and you talked about the actual equalities there.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of communities across the region have really high taxes for their school districts, including Philly. Philly's the 16th highest tax effort for its school district. Upper Darby, Chester Upland, William Penn, all these inner ring suburb school districts, Cheltenham, Bristol, Norristown. Families are paying an awful lot of their personal income for taxes for their schools. But the problem is that their personal income isn't high enough to generate enough money for their schools, and nor is their property value. So their taxes are going up. And unfortunately, a lot of people are worried that their school quality is going down. And what they know is as more poor kids move into their communities, their school districts are more stressed. And families from Philly have moved across the region, and they are looking to the school district to be the hope for their kids. And people in those communities want the school districts to be the hope for their kids. But their school districts have less money to spend on classroom education today than they did 6 years ago. And so school districts across the region are hurting. And you see less counselors, less librarians, less people who help kids who are struggling. You see more school districts struggling to keep all their kids on grade level. And so while we talk a lot about Philly and our news media covers Philly, if you live in William Penn or Southeast Delco or some of these other school districts, the writing's on the wall. We need something to change dramatically around our schools. And that dramatic change has to come from Harrisburg. Harrisburg needs to step up, fund the schools, so that families across our region who are struggling aren't constantly seeing tax hikes for their school district. It's the state's responsibility to fund our schools, and they are letting us down.
Is it the state's or is it the federal government that should be stepping in? Because aren't we the only industrialized or gross product number country that doesn't have an across-the-board education system that guarantees a certain type of education for all?
I don't know that it's true, but if it were, the problem in our country is that the federal constitution doesn't speak to a right to education for any student. But every state constitution does. Every state constitution establishes that the operation of a public education system is a state responsibility. And the state's really far away. It's in Harrisburg. And most people, you know, don't even know who their state rep or their state senator is. We know we had big congressional elections, but we also had big state elections. And that's where the rubber hits the road on education. For our school districts in Pennsylvania, federal funding is only 7% of school district budgets. Even in a place like Philly that's poor, it's only 7%. The money that should be in our school district should be coming from the state, at least 50%. And we're in the bottom ranks. We only have 30% of the money coming from the state. It puts us 48th in the country.
48th.
And that's the reason that in Lower Merion, you can get such an extraordinary education, where they're spending about $30,000 a kid on education. And in Philadelphia, they're spending about $11,000. Because we don't have the state stepping up and equalizing education, which it should do. And so kids suffer. They suffer across this region because the state is dropping the ball.
You just made a quick reference. People put their hope for their kids in their schools. But are we asking more from our schools than we did before? Because now they are supposed to be social workers. They are providing health care. They're dealing with families who are in need of overall services themselves.
You know, we are asking that, and it's because the economy is demanding it. So when I went to high school, I graduated in 1976. Maybe a lot of your listeners on some of your stations also graduated in that time. You know, in those days, 50% of the kids that we started kindergarten with didn't graduate high school. It was no big deal. They could get a job. They could find a job. Now we need our schools to graduate 100% of the people coming in for our economy to have enough skilled workers. And so as a result, schools have to meet the needs of the 50% that used to drop out, whether it's how we instruct them, whether it was the crisis in their families and they need social work. Kids haven't changed, but the expectations, as you say, Laura, on the schools have. And that's because we are competing with Shanghai and Singapore and, you know, schools in Germany. And so we need a lot more talented kids to graduate high school. So schools have to do more than they did when I graduated. Instead of 50%, they got to get to 100% graduation rate. And that means a lot more effort. And in fact, they have a lot more money. I mean, clearly they're spending more money than when I went to school. But inflation adjusted, it's not that much more, even though their responsibility is that much greater.
What I was trying to get at is that now today people expect schools to feed. Teachers are responsible for finding out a child's living conditions. We're putting more social work onto the schools as they're being funded less, and we're expecting more from a kid to graduate.
Exactly. It's a very confounding situation. And as a parent, it's really frustrating because you watch schools who are not making enough effort with your kid, perhaps, because they have to work on a kid who's struggling and falling behind. Or you're a parent that, you know, is not good at navigating the schools and you need more help and there's not somebody there to do it. Absolutely, the burden on schools is so much greater and the resources just aren't there to make it happen. We can change that. We can speak to Harrisburg. We can speak to the governor and say, you guys need to step to the plate. This isn't happening in Maryland and Massachusetts, where they have stepped to the plate and they fund their schools and their outcomes are a lot better and they attract great people to work in the schools and they graduate so many more prepared children.
You just said prepared children. are we teaching the right curriculum today? When you graduated in 1976, my era, there were kids going to vocational schools. There were kids who were expecting to, and I grew up in the Midwest, who were going to go into agriculture. There were kids who were going to go on and be doctors and lawyers, etc. But there were also kids who planned to work at the local automotive plants.
Right. Well, unfortunately anymore, we don't have local automotive plants. So that really requires a change in the curricula. So now we have to make sure every kid graduates able to get post-secondary education. Could be a training program. I could be learning to be an apprenticeship carpenter and then graduate as a journeyman, or I could be getting a four-year degree. But even a carpenter these days needs really good math skills. And to be a welder, I need to understand technology. So we've had to amp up what we teach. Some school districts do that better than others. Some school districts have terrific vocational training programs, including Philly. Look, the largest ag school in the state is operated by the city of Philadelphia, Saul High School, right? So we have options for kids. We don't have enough. But, you know, Delaware County runs an amazing VOTEC program, and so does Bucks County. So we have the makings of what our kids need. I would say where we're the biggest challenge, Laura, is in technology. Mm-hmm. Our kids are ahead of their teachers, and our teachers are not prepared to understand the trends in technology that need to be taught. You and I, you know, we have apps on our phone. I have no idea how they got there. And I don't know what it means to write an app, but I'll tell you, there's a shortage in app writers. And so kids could be graduating high school earning significant money if we understood how to train them for that. So, you know, some school districts, again, those with resources can do really terrific things for kids. But in a resource-starved environment, it's really hard to think about what do you do next that's better.
Let me say that this is our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, the Executive Director of PCCY, Public Citizens for Children and Youth, Donna Cooper. If you would like more information about what we're talking about, go to PCCY.org. That's PCCY.org. You can find them on Twitter at PCCY Team. Find them on Facebook at PCCY. And you mentioned, again, we need to get kids to graduate. We're looking at that 100% number, but yet it's early on. They know by third and fifth grade, and there are benchmarks that a kid isn't going to make it to the finish line.
Absolutely.
That isn't going to go. So it's all at the very, very beginning.
Exactly.
And so there we're looking at early education for kids and quality child care and all of that stuff that in a lot of communities, it's just not there.
Well, and not only that, parents can't afford it. So in the studies that we're releasing in February, we find that the biggest household expense for middle-class families is child care. And as a result, if you want to send your kid to a really good child care program, you're looking at about $15,000 to $18,000 a year. And if you have two kids, you're looking at $36,000 a year. Now, that's out of reach for most families. And here again, we know, as you said, the best time to change the trajectory of a kid's life is to get them in high-quality early child care so that they can enter school reading and ready, right? And so we in Pennsylvania have some subsidized child care, but it's, you know, there's waiting lists all over the place. And the very families who struggle the most to prepare their kids for school are the families who can't afford to get, who are waiting on those lists. So as you know, Philadelphia passed the soda tax with the goal of making pre-K available to nearly every kid. And this September, you know, there'll be another 3,300 kids then, or 3,500 that enter that. And you see the results. You're seeing in the Philadelphia School District more kids entering reading and ready. And in Pottstown School District, every kid, the school district is paying for every kid to go to pre-K, high-quality pre-K. And we just need to make a bigger effort. You know, it would be so smart. It's so much cheaper to affect a little kid's brain than it is a teenager's brain. Because a little kid's brain is still forming. You know, as parents, anybody listening, it's amazing what your kids learn every day. And if we can take advantage of that by high-quality child care and getting kids in high-quality child care, we can do a tremendous service to our school districts and take off some of the burden. It's the quickest way to drop special ed costs. Special ed costs are the second biggest driver of every school district's budget. after retirement costs, second biggest driver of increases. So we could help taxpayers by reducing special ed if we were able to invest more in early childhood education here. And, you know, business leaders across the region and the country are calling on Governor Wolf and governors across the country, up your spending in early childhood education. And we're hoping Tom Wolf will do that with the budget that he's going to propose in February. We want 10,000 more kids in high quality pre-K starting next September.
And a low-income kid is also facing other issues, hunger, homelessness, all that are considered trauma as far as, you know, a specialist looking at that. And a quality early education is going to be one of the, not cures, but one of the offsets for early childhood trauma.
Well, first of all, hunger, they'll get fed. So we know one of the good things about schools and early childhood is kids get meals. Who otherwise wouldn't. But also in trauma, you know, we train and continue to train the early childhood faculty, the women and men who work in childcare programs, how to recognize trauma and how to help children work through that. And so it really can be a place where we begin to nip in the bud the behaviors that come out of trauma that become self-sabotage the rest of your life. You know, as an adult, if you, you know, witness trauma or you were subjected to trauma, you probably get angry a little bit easier. You get blue a little bit easier. Maybe you drink too much. Maybe you smoke too much. Those kinds of things are able to be addressed in early childhood because your neurons and your brain still, you know, developing. And what a gift we would give to the next generation if we invested in ways that compensated for the failings of parents, because we're all just human, and made it possible for them to grow up without those wounds and bad behaviors.
Well, we're touching again now on health, so let's switch it over into that area right now. And a kid today faces a lot of issues. And how do you want to tackle health?
Well, let me tackle it with one immediate thing first, and that is to say that, you know, sometimes people point to a lot of kids acting out, and maybe being, sometimes people say that kid's a little dull. And what we're finding is we have a hidden poison in our homes, and that's lead. So you remember a couple years ago, like 3 years ago, we had the Flint water crisis. And the entire nation was riveted by the fact that children in Flint were drinking water that had lead in it, and they were getting poisoned at a very high rate. You know, we never looked right here in our own backyard in Pennsylvania, and we never looked right here in our own backyard in Philly. Children are being poisoned at lead at a much higher rate in Allentown and Philadelphia and Norristown than they were ever poisoned in Flint. And the problem with lead poisoning is it sticks with you the rest of your life. Lead is very sticky, and it makes it, you learned less quickly, you retain information less amply, and you also gather and develop impulse control and anger management problems. And so we are very serious about trying to get lead out of the homes. Here it's not water, it's paint. And here again, the government in the 90s was spending a lot of money to get the paint out of kids' homes, but that money dwindled, and we are an old community. All over Monco, Delco, Bucks, Chester, Philly, we have homes built before 1978, before lead paint was banned. And our kids are still being poisoned. We have 10,000 kids in the state that we know have been poisoned, but we only test about a quarter of the kids in the state in the way that they should be tested. So it could be significantly higher. And that's a special ed cost for districts. And it's a horror for parents because they see the promise of their children, you know, evaporating in front of their eyes because it's lifetime consequences. And so we're very proud that Montgomery County and Lehigh County have advanced a lawsuit against the lead paint manufacturers to get them to pay to get the lead out of the home. Government used to pay, and government should still pay, but really the people who put it there in the first place, who made that product, ought to help cure this ill.
Now, you mentioned that we know of 10,000 because of the study, but those are only kids probably that were in a home that was identified as a crisis area.
Yes, yes.
What about the kids? Well, schools, recent newspaper reporting on that. And the schools were the contributing cause.
Yes.
And then you've got kids who are living next to old factories. Lead is in the environment in the playgrounds where they're playing.
Absolutely.
So we're not testing a kid who lives by a playground. We're testing a kid who lives in a 1920 home.
Well, we're supposed to be testing every kid twice by the time they turn three. That's the rule. So if you're listening and you're a parent, and your doctor, whether it's a pediatrician or a family doctor, has not tested your kid once by the time they turn one, and again somewhere between their second and third birthday, you need to demand that lead test. When children are little and they eat lead, it sticks with them. Now, it is true that, and the majority of lead poisoning happens in people's homes. 65 to 70% of lead, when children test positive, it's in their homes. And it's lead paint and lead dust and lead in the soil, obviously from factories. But mostly from paint. The lead in our schools gets into teenage bodies or little kids, you know, elementary school bodies. Your body can absorb that better when you're older than when you're under three. So while that was horrible and we need to get the lead out of our schools, the lifelong danger of that is much less than the danger to an infant or toddler. So every parent and grandparent listening to this, make sure your kid is tested twice by the time they're three.
Are they seeing a doctor to demand that?
Well, remember, children in Pennsylvania are very fortunate to be on Medicaid, right? So Medicaid is an incredibly, and CHIP, very robust healthcare program. And so 95% of the kids in this state are insured, which is really great, almost 96. And much of that is due to Governor Casey and Governor Rendell, who built and expanded the CHIP program in Pennsylvania and the maintenance of the Medicaid program, which is mostly federally funded. And so I believe it's 40% of the kids in the state are getting their insurance that way. But the kids who are not insured, Laura, are the kids who are undocumented.
That's where I was about to go. Kids whose families do not dare access care that is available to them.
Yes. And we are banned by state law. You know, six states have changed their law to say these children are innocent. Their parents might have broken the law to come to the U.S., but these children are innocent. And innocent children cannot be held hostage for the crimes of their parents, and they must be given health care access. And we have been working very hard to build the support at the Pennsylvania legislature, because that's where this gets decided, to let these children see a doctor, let these children get the health care they need. And by the way, it's in everybody's interest to do so, because untreated, they will end up not going to school, being sick, ending up filling our prisons, and we'll be spending money at the high end of $33,000 a year to keep them in jail when we could have given them health care for $250 a month.
You can't go on after that statement. Where do you go from there? Except to talk about what are the direct services that PCCY offers?
Well, you know, that's why we do free eye and dental care, because we hear from dentists that when they do volunteer days, they see children whose entire mouths are rotted out. And imagine the tooth pain. I randomly have had a toothache, and I can't go to work when one tooth is rotting for some reason or has a cavity. There are children whose entire mouths are rotted out, and they tend to be children who are uninsured or whose parents are on private insurance that has a lousy dental plan. And so we do, in between spring break, you know, when your kids are on spring break this year in any school district in the region, you call us at PCCY and we will get them a free dental appointment. So we work with dentists across the region and they give us every appointment that week and we fill up their dental chairs and kids get their teeth cleaned and they get everything they need to take care of their mouth. That way they can go to school and pay attention. And the same goes if you don't have glasses. Imagine you're in school and you don't have glasses. Well, what's the point? So that's why every fall, usually in October, and I believe we're going to do it on October 6th this year, we invite every kid in this region who needs eyeglasses to come to Will's Eye Hospital and get their eyes examined and get two pairs of free glasses and get signed up for health insurance. So that we're working really hard to, at least where there are gaps in healthcare coverage, that we can connect kids to care, we do it. Now, if parents are listening and they don't have health insurance for their children, we also operate a helpline. You call us and we help you find affordable health insurance. Typically, it's going to be through CHIP or medical assistance if you have any legal documents. And if you don't have legal documents, we can connect you to clinics. We try to remove any barrier to healthcare for children.
you obviously work well with other organizations and partnerships. Do you have great partnerships that you want to, to discuss
well,
right now?
Sure. Well, obviously, we work with Will's Eye Hospital, the Eagles Youth Partnership. We work with Puentes de Salud and Esperanza Health Clinics. We work with Aclamo in Norristown. We work with all of the partners that help us reach out to families who are serving families who are new Americans, whether they're from the Southeast Asian and Indonesian community or the Afro-Caribbean community. And we work with families whose children have autism and have extraordinarily special healthcare needs that private health insurance still unfortunately doesn't cover. So we run the gamut, and it's so it could be Autism Speaks or the Arc of Pennsylvania. We have so many great partners that help us reach these families. And the dentists, Kids Smile, and amazing dentists from across the region who, Vetri and others, who say, bring us these children and we will treat them. We will treat them not just that day, but we will treat them going forward. So incredible medical professionals who donate their services.
What about the parent? Let's discuss, though, is there an income requirement for accessing these
not
services?
Not for any of ours, no, because we recognize that private health insurance is letting families down as well as the gap in healthcare coverage. So there's no income gap for any no income requirements for our free dental or free eye care. And to when people come, we talk to them about signing their children up for CHIP so that they can get better health care for their kids. And there is no income requirement on CHIP. But as you earn more, you know, let's say you're earning $60,000, $70,000, you'll have a small copay on CHIP. And if you earn $100,000, it'll be a larger copay. But CHIP is open to every child in the Commonwealth, and it's an extremely good healthcare product, insurance product.
I was concerned about the parent that maybe is in an affluent area. But today, in today's economy, with you can have a Lexus in the car, in the garage, and have a five-bedroom home and still be living paycheck to paycheck.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we find is, you know, families earning, you know, $75,000, which may not be a Lexus and five bedrooms, but might be a Mazda and three bedrooms, they are underwater. They are totally underwater just before, even before they buy their neighbor's kid a birthday present. Between their childcare, their mortgage, their local taxes, their food, they can't afford to get tutoring for their kids, pay for after-school sports for their kids. It is very hard to do right by your kids, even earning as much as $75,000 in our region these days.
And that's absolutely obscene. And parents have to be the advocate to find the resources for their kids. Nobody is actually saying your child qualifies for this particular special assistance, et cetera, et cetera. Who helps them?
That's why the radio show you're doing is the biggest help, right? Because it's the way people find out that there's help for them, that we can help them maybe get some support on their child care costs. We can help them with their kids' health insurance. We can help them become an advocate for their school district. We can help them find a way to get affordable health insurance. So, you know, or people might need more support. My kid needs mental health counseling. My kid is struggling with addiction. We can help people. We know enough information about what's happening in this region and the healthcare sectors that we can connect people to the services that they need. But the most important thing we can do is help parents be advocates to speak to their local elected officials to say we're not doing enough so that every kid succeeds. And when every kid doesn't succeed, even my kid doesn't do as well as he needs or she needs to do, because the teacher's spending time with the kids who are struggling, the healthcare system's spending time with the kids who are struggling. And if we lifted all boats, one, we'd be more efficient, and number two, more kids would thrive.
And of course, you can find out all this information at their website, PCCY.org. Public Citizens for Children and Youth, PCCY.org. Follow them on Twitter at PCCY Team and on Facebook, PCCY. Very easy to find. And here is where I say thank you very much to Donna Cooper, the Executive Director of PCCY.
Thank you.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.